There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
No step too high for a high stepper. And that's how we get started on this countdown to Thanksgiving week. Midday Mobile, live local talk over the next couple of hours. Glad you're here. Hey, y'all, my name's Sean. Phone number, text line, 343-0106, 343-0106. If you want to be part of the show today, I'd love for you to be part. I've got some friends coming by as well. Cameron Smith's going to join us in the 1 o'clock hour. Our buddy Jeff Poor will be in studio. Lots to talk about with him. And a lot of national stories to get into and some state stories. And I want to start off right here locally, though. At a press conference just a little over an hour ago, press conference that happened with Baldwin County Sheriff Hoss Mack, talking about this shooting we were reporting on this morning, and the shooting near Magnolia Springs. And the report now is, out of the victims involved, four involved in this Baldwin County shooting, all victims related to Alabama superstar, of course, Falcon superstar, Julio Jones. Here, let's go to a little bit of the audio of Sheriff Hoss Mack from this morning.
For coming here today, the Baldwin County Sheriff's Office would like to take this opportunity to update everyone on the shooting investigation that we began yesterday around noon. As you're aware, on November the 18th, around noon, Baldwin County Sheriff's Office 911 received a call of apparently an individual being shot in the area of 15339 Springfield Court in Magnolia Springs, which runs off of County Road 49 just north of Bond Secure. My deputies were responding to that incident. We also received a subsequent call through 911 and the Foley Police Department that some individuals had arrived at South Baldwin Regional Medical Center in Foley with gunshot wounds as well. And there was also at that time a report of a vehicle fire, which turned out to not be a vehicle fire. The Sheriff's Office responded to the initial scene location. At that time, one individual was there who had a gunshot wound to the abdomen. That individual has been identified as Jaylen Baker, 19-year-old, who lived within the mobile home there. He was transported by helicopter to University Hospital in Mobile. He had a gunshot wound to the abdomen and is currently listed still in critical condition. During the course of the investigation, the other three individuals were identified at South Baldwin Regional Medical Center. They were Jermaine Dickerson, age 22, Tamarius Dickerson, age 23, and Royal Jones, age 20. All three of those individuals had also received gunshot wounds. Jermaine Dickerson and Royal Jones were transported to University Hospital as well, where they are currently still in the hospital. Both had gunshot wounds, and at this time, we believe that those individuals are stable at this time. Tamaris Dickerson was treated at South Baldwin Regional Medical Center and released from the hospital there, having suffered one single gunshot wound to the lower back. Baldwin County Sheriff's Office investigators began to process the scene. We have recovered two pistols and one rifle in the subsequent investigation. At this time, we do know that Jermaine Dickerson and Tamarius Dickerson are brothers, and we believe that Royal Jones is their cousin. It is also our understanding that the Dickersons are the half-brothers to Jaylen Baker, who was the individual that was located at the trailer. This investigation has literally been going on since yesterday afternoon with no break. Investigators conducting interviews all the way up to this morning. We're still trying to gather the facts as to what actually occurred. We believe at this time that three individuals went to Baker's residence. There was a confrontation in the doorway or right inside the door of the trailer with at least one gunshot being fired at that time. And then there were many other gunshots. We have at least 30 rounds were fired that we know of at this time. That part is still under investigation. The subsequent search of the residence revealed, as I said, the weapons that were taken. And we're still trying to get to the bottom of what actually started this confrontation that led up to the gunshots. This time, no arrest has been made. The case remains under investigation by the Baldwin County Sheriff's Office. We have been assisted by the Foley Police Department and also in consultation with the Baldwin County District Attorney's Office. And at this time, I'll take any questions.
All right. So that was a little bit from that presser this morning. No additional information available right now, just following this. But obviously the main story is you have a shooting involving four there in South Baldwin County, but then all related to football phenom, man who could catch a pass anywhere, Julio Jones. So we'll look at this. By the way, I checked to Julio Jones's Twitter account. Nothing new on there. Actually, nothing new on there in a long, long time. And Dalton, maybe he's more on other social media platforms. We can find out if there's any reaction from him there. We will watch this and give you the latest information on this story when it becomes available. All right. On the way, we will talk to, we'll talk to a couple of people. Jeff Poore is going to join us. Also, Cameron Smith is going to join us. And I want to add this in, too. A voice that used to be on the show quite a bit. Back in 2016 and earlier on this show. Some on the morning show, but lots and lots on the midday show. The guy that had started Yellowhammer News, that is Cliff Sims. And I remember one day when he called me off air and just said, "Hey, man, I'm taking a new job." I said, "Man, you got Yellowhammer going. What do you do a new job?" He said, "I'm going to go to work for the Trump campaign." And it was interesting because Cliff had been a critic of Trump, not like a never Trumper critic, but somebody like many of us, I think, that looked at Donald Trump and looked at his conservative credentials against a Ted Cruz or somebody else and had big questions out there. So he goes to work for the campaign, ends up being part of the transition team, and then worked for a while in the White House before he was out. And now the story, you'll see his name. Heck, he made the Drudge Report today that his book, we mentioned this morning, this book that's due out January 29th, I think that's when it's supposed to be out, called Team of Vipers, My 500 Extraordinary Days in the Trump White House, Cliff Sims' book. He's getting a lot of press. Yeah, getting some national press now. But yeah, he is the guy that was on the show with us for all those years beforehand. And hopefully, I'm going to get some confirmation that in January, closer to book release date, he will be on the show with us. It says here, this is pretty interesting, reading a Mediaite story. And on Mediaite, it says, but if the title of the expose and advanced sum is any indication, which that advanced sum they referred to as a seven-figure deal, said if the title of the expose and the advanced sum is any indication, the book is not going to be another hagiography from a Trump sycophant. In other words, hagiography. It's not going to be just fawning adulation. It says, it does not paint a rosy picture of the atmosphere in the White House, according to Maggie Haberman, who writes about this book. And they found with an author's note here. Okay, so this will be the author's note that probably appears in the front of the book. And this is what Cliff writes. I think this is interesting because I take from it one thing. It sounds like Mediaite takes something different from it. But here's what Cliff supposedly has written here for the front of the book. It says, "I suspect that posterity will look back on this bizarre time in history like we were living on the pages of a Dickens novel. Lincoln famously had his team of rivals. Trump had his team of vipers. We served, we fought, we brought our egos, we brought our personal agendas and vendettas. We were ruthless, and some of us, I assume, were good people. And I was there. This is what I saw. And unlike many leaders in the White House, or many leakers, sorry, in the White House, I have put my name on it." End quote. So there's the author's note line to give you a little advance of what may be coming out from an Alabamian that was working inside the Trump campaign, transition team, and White House. Should be interesting. All right, so much to talk about with the White House. We'll get into Acosta or not, right? That conversation. Also, what happened in Georgia? Do you have a concession here, or do you have a call to fight it out? We'll talk about that and a whole lot more with Cameron Smith from AL.com. He joins us next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 1220 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Tell you what, I'll link up that press conference from Baldwin County Sheriff Hoss Mack. It's posted up on our news partner's website, WKRG.com. See that, but yeah, it says that all four involved in that shooting in the Magnolia Springs Bon Secours area were related to Julio Jones. Of course, local football phenom from Foley, and then, of course, at Alabama, now with the Falcons. And no word that we've seen anywhere coming back from Julio Jones or anybody with Julio Jones on it, but we'll keep you in the loop on that. Speaking of Tuscaloosa, speaking of football, you know, the little football game coming up this weekend. By the way, coverage here at FM Talk 106.5 starting at 11:30 on Saturday for the Iron Bowl. My buddy Cameron Smith, who are you going to go? I know you went, what, last weekend? Are you going to Iron Bowl? Are you going to be up there?
No, I am in Pennsylvania with my in-laws for Thanksgiving, so I'm going to enjoy it from up here.
Is it hard? I mean, do you have to explain to them the necessity of you being in front of the TV up there?
I mean, after years, I think they finally come to understand that, like, this is ritual, and they actually embrace it, even though they don't feel as strong.
Okay, well, good. Just as long as, I mean, you're not going to get blocked from watching the game. I'll tweet you. And we'll communicate back and forth on that. I do want to get your take on a myriad of things today, but I want to start off here with CNN, Jim Acosta, the White House, other media partners. What happened last week with the Acosta losing press credentials for the White House, then having a judge, and I think it's important to note here, and you can give us kind of the legal spin on this, but the judge really not ruling on the, like you've taught us over time, on the big issue, kind of ruling narrowly to restore Acosta's credentials, but based on more semantics than some big change to the rules, right?
Well, I think the big thing to remember here is the First Amendment is a big deal. It's in the Constitution. I mean, this is why but it is a hallmark of our republic. But there's also contours and limitations that it's not absolute. And I think in this situation, the reason he got his press pass back was, hey, it's kind of like in the NFL or college football when they make the call, you know, that's a little bit more conservative, knowing they're going to review it. That's kind of where we are right now, because I think the idea that anyone who wants a press pass to the White House press pool gets one because of the First Amendment, that seems a little bit strong to me, but I do see a judge saying, hey, let's just keep it the way it is. Let's review this and kind of go from there. Frankly, I mean, this seems like a big distraction. I do think that the president and the White House probably do have to provide a degree of transparency to the media under the First Amendment, but it's not clear that they have to give press passes to anybody or that there's a specific ground that the Constitution requires them to afford access. And so it'll be interesting to see how this shakes out.
Yeah, I do wonder where that line is between a news group and an individual. I mean, just for sake of wild argument, your ex-spouse happened, your president and your ex-spouse who get real nasty divorce, whatever it is, they happen to be the reporter for XYZ news agency. And you say, listen, I can't have that person asking me questions. It's tainted. We need somebody else from your news agency can ask it, but I'm banning that person. I mean, you still have the American people still get the information, just maybe not through that person. I mean, can you make that argument?
Sure, and I think it's interesting to see that, like, access for the press is important, but I do see the president's argument of, I don't have to fight with you. And I think the Acosta scenario of, hey, I'm going to say my piece, I'm going to try to, engage you and battle with you, it makes for good entertainment, but I can see the president's point of view of, hey, this is a White House press briefing where you can ask questions and I could answer, but I'm not going to like fight with you. And if I don't want to answer, then I'm not going to answer it the way you want. And I think that the president probably does have a pretty high degree of control over, you know, how he holds those. It's another thing for him to say, well, I'm going to ban all press access. I think that's a different animal. Yeah. But to say, hey, I don't want to deal with Acosta, I'd be a little bit surprised to see a court say, well, you have to, because, you know, what's the grounds for somebody? Let's say you, we'll use you as an example. You said, I want a White House press pass. I want to be in there. And they said, well, you know, obviously if we gave one to every radio talk show host in the country,
right,
we wouldn't have enough room. What's the grounds for denial? What's legitimate and what's not? Frankly, I'm interested to know the answer.
Yeah, and because, I mean, you're setting some sort of precedent there, or maybe, or maybe not. But I do wonder, okay, what does this mean? Is there a trickle-down? In other words, if there is some either dry ink or just pencil precedent set with this, does that go down to, okay, let me bring it back home, Mobile City Council? Somebody on the Mobile City Council doesn't like the questioning they've received from a reporter at one of our local TV stations or a radio station here or something like that. And they say, well, you know what, y'all are not allowed to be in here in council chambers. You know, does it go down to that level? Because at that level, here at the municipal level, I think people would be up in arms.
I think they rightly should be. I think that at any level, the real issue is one of transparency, that we in America have a longstanding tradition of basically allowing media critics of our politicians to do their job. And that's something that I think there is a strong public interest in defending. And I understand politicians not liking it, but if politicians have the ability to shut down uncomfortable exchanges just because they don't want to deal with it, then that's a disservice to the public. And it'll be interesting to see how, particularly if this advances through the courts, and see what are the permissible time, place, and manner restrictions that are placed on speech when it comes to a politician. What do they have in the ability to exclude? What can they stop? Do they have to answer questions? There's a lot that, frankly, we just took for granted, and now we're in an environment where I think politicians are feeling a little more emboldened, feel that the media is attacking them rather than trying to promote transparency and accountability, and it's a new ballgame right now.
Yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying about, and I'm in the same boat where I see arguments coming from both sides. I will say that the hood ornaments, the emblems for this argument, are two very big personalities here that gets people galvanized. That's why I took it to the Mobile City Council level to try to discuss it at that level. But it is, I mean, it's something that I guess we assume the rules were out there, but maybe they're not completely clear, and maybe now we have to. What is that you said? Time, place, and manner? Is that the?
Sure. The Supreme Court over time has listed basically exceptions to the First Amendment that, for example, obscenity, that's not protected by the First Amendment, but somebody could say, well, hey, it's my free speech. Well, there are public policy justifications limiting that are quite compelling. And so there are time, place, and manner. For example, I may not be able to ban your speech as a government entity, but I can tell you, well, you can only do it during this forum, or you have to have the ability to, schedule it for logistics reasons. I mean, there are a lot of restrictions that people don't want to talk about, but that do exist in First Amendment jurisprudence. And I think this is one of those things where we may end up with some more specifics from the courts on what a politician may and may not do with respect to the press. I think it's a shame, though, that a lot of this is driven by a personality clash between a media personality and Acosta and the president of the United States.
Yeah, that doesn't seem to be. Yeah, Acosta is not in a position. There's so many champions out there because they're looking to defend their own turf, you know, when other news agencies step up. But it does make it harder because it's not like Acosta's coming at this as some person that's done no wrong that, you know, deserves everybody's support. I mean, the guy is he's absolutely aggressive towards the president and moves on beyond the scope of asking questions.
Yeah, and I think that's the challenge that a lot of people see right now. And I see this as an opinion writer, that we've blurred the lines between reporting, journalism, and opinion writing, and they're all kind of mixed together these days. And so when you see Acosta, he's not purporting to be unbiased. He's not sitting there as some sort of objective voice just wanting to know the answer to questions. He very clearly has an angle and obviously is antagonistic towards the president. And so I think the president plays into that and says, yeah, you don't like me, I don't like you. This is a personality clash now. And there are very important underlying questions of press access and the First Amendment that need to be answered. And this is an interesting way to get to that conversation.
All right, we come back from the break. More with Cameron Smith with AL.com. The way I wanted to take the Acosta discussion and the president and Acosta from the big level of the White House down to your local city council, I want to take this next one the other way, as Abrams, Stacey Abrams in Georgia is kind of conceding, but not really. What does this mean if this starts happening all over this republic? Does that make us third world in nature? We'll get in the discussion when we return right here on Midday Mobile.
This is not a speech of concession, because concession means to acknowledge an action is right, true, or proper. As a woman of conscience and faith, I cannot concede that. But my assessment is the law currently allows no further viable remedy.
Okay, now if that's a concession, then I'm the Pope, man. Cameron, I mean,
that's interesting. And I understand. I mean, it was a tough fought battle, and ultimately she wasn't successful. And I look at these things rather dispassionately, saying, count all legally eligible votes, see where they fall out, and that's the end of it. That's how our republic works. That's how the states work. We want to sort tough issues with that mechanism, and I understand that people don't like to lose, and they may not like the actions of the other candidate, but barring some, as she pointed out, legal remedy or legal anomaly that allows a challenge, that's how we sort it out. And I understand the emotions run high in these scenarios, but again, that's why the vote counts are what decides it.
All right, and we should note that. I mean, it is of note in a state as populous as Georgia. I think it was under 60,000 votes decided that race. So it's very close. It wasn't some, you know, wild margin, and you have somebody who, you know, had one-third of the votes not giving a concession speech. I get it. It was close, and like you said, it was rough and tumble to the end. But what worries me, the same way I wondered if any kind of fallout from a situation with the White House press briefing room ever, you know, comes home to roost at your local municipality and, you know, local reporters covering it, can it go the other way in the fact that this is a Georgia race, but you have, let's look at Florida, you had Gillum, what did he do? He conceded, then he deconceded, then he reconceded, but you have Abrams not really conceding, just saying, well, he got more votes than I did. The worry I see is this is what I see around the world when violence breaks out. And I don't think violence is breaking out here. I'm not ringing some bell right now. But this is how it starts, right? You look at some country somewhere half a world away, and you have the elections come out, and the people that lost, their supporters don't like that results. And then you go into a civil war.
Yeah, we see that around the world. And I think the legitimacy of our elections is really important. We have to be vigilant about that. I think you know, we hear about voter suppression and voter fraud, and depends on where your politics are. You know, we yell and scream about that stuff. But the underlying point of making sure that our elections, that we have confidence in those and the results, and, you know, even things that, for example, in Florida, like the ability to count votes credibly, Those are things that we really need to pay attention to. It doesn't sound super interesting a lot of times, but we need to have confidence in the process itself. It's not enough to, you know, look at the outcome and say we didn't like the outcome, therefore it's not legitimate. That's silly. But we do need to make sure that the process itself is secure, that the process is legitimate and credible, and that we agree that we're going to live with the results as we go into these elections. Because when we start eroding confidence in the processes themselves, it may not happen today, but down the road, folks will just simply say, we don't recognize the legitimacy of government itself.
Right. That's,
because yep. The elections are wrong.
Well, okay, let's bring it to something I can understand at my level here. If we're looking at the election process, are we worried about the refs or the rules of the game? Meaning for a football game, let's compare it that way. Because if the teams that lined up to play this coming Saturday, if Alabama and Auburn did not agree on the basic rules of football, right? That the basic rules of football were interpreted differently. That is an undoing of all future football games. If they're not sure that the refs have gotten their eyes checked in a while, that's a different story, because that comes and goes and changes. That can be, a Brenda Snipes and she's out as a ref or something like that. But if you think that the rules, you're not agreeing. So what do you think it is? You think the process that people are worried about are the rules or the refs?
I think it's both. And I think what ends up happening is it's predominantly the refs at first.
Okay.
And saying, well, you didn't administer this election well. You know, you purged the voter rolls impermissibly, or you didn't count these absentee ballots. Sure, we saw a lot of that. We saw a lot of those allegations, things like that the people administering the elections weren't doing it right. But then you see it conflating into, well, then the process itself must be broken. That, you know, if we're not getting the results that we want, then there's something illegitimate here. You saw that with Clinton and the popular vote versus the Electoral College. We agreed to the Electoral College going into the election. That was the process for electing the president. Well, then the popular vote comes out, and whoa, that popular vote is won by Clinton. And then people are saying, well, see, it's not just the rest, it's the process itself. If it would have been popular vote, then this would have been different. So process broken. And I think that it's even bigger than that, that we want what we want so bad in politics that we're willing to sort of set the whole thing on fire sometimes when we don't. And we need to remember that the protections of the process, the protections of our republic and the structures that it has are really a good thing. And frankly, not something that we should run from, but that we should insist upon, that we should have things like debate and amendment in Congress, that we should have votes on legislation. When these processes are honored, our republic thrives. And when we reject them, we get in trouble quick.
Yeah, and I guess that's the point where I don't think it's coming tomorrow, but I look at countries around the world and I do worry, because when it's not about refs and it's about the rules, the rules are, the way I see it, the founding of our republic and the Constitution and subsequent documents. And that's the worry here. The worry that, you know, you get to the end of the football game on Saturday and somebody says, well, it's not about the amount of points on the board. It's actually the amount of rushing yards or minutes of possession of the ball or something. If you both sides want to yell about the ref, you'll have another matchup and you can get rid of the refs and do. But if you all of a sudden you're not the same place on the rules of the football game, I mean, that brings it all down, all of it down.
Yeah, I agree, Sean. And I think the bigger issue is that we don't teach the next generation well why the processes and structures of our republic are important. We've kind of let civics fall to the back burner, and we haven't explained, like, hey, here's why this process works. Here's why this was a wise structure of government. And it's sort of winner-take-all politics. I mean, Congress is kind of a mangled mess where, you know, we do these continued resolutions and funding riders, and it doesn't feel like, it's certainly not honoring the process in the way that a lot of these structures were intended to function. And rather than calling that out and saying, hey, we're not happy with this, we want leaders that will honor the process, we've simply said, hey, we want our side to get what it wants, and we don't care how that happens. And that's it. That, I think, heads us in a very dangerous direction.
I'll second that. All right, just a minute to go, but I got to ask you this. I throw this curveball at you because you have better contacts than me on this. What do you hear from Jeff Sessions? Anything for anything new since last week from his people? Any kind of word?
No, I've poked around. I still hold my position. I'd be a little surprised if he chose to run for that Senate seat. But to be frank, he had, to the best of my knowledge, he hasn't shot that down yet. And so it'd be interesting to see how that pans out.
All right. We will wait and hear. Something after the holidays, maybe. Maybe in January, right?
Well, for somebody, that might be a Merry Christmas.
That's right. That's for sure. Some it will be. Yeah, if he said no, it would be the merriest of Christmas for so many that would have run for the Senate seat in 2020. As always, Cameron, thank you for your time. Remind folks if they want to get more of what you do, of course, AL.com. And where do you reside on Twitter?
At D. Cameron Smith on Twitter. Come check it out. I got an interesting column on bullying today. Go check it out.
All right, we will. Cameron Smith, AL.com, or check him out, and we'll retweet that over there at the Twitter feed, at FM Talk 1065, 1245. Head to the news, come back. Our buddy Jeff Poore is going to join us as well today. Lots to talk about with him. We'll get into that. And also, I've got the evidence right here in the studio. The most money I've ever spent on a piece of hardware. So I have four, they're really, they're washer tap screws, and I have become my parents, because it's been bothering me for an hour and a half how much I spent on these washer tap screws, but I'll tell you when we get back, and you'll be embarrassed for me. All right, 1245, we'll check in with News 5 right now.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 1065. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, 1250, FM Talk 1065 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Monday, which, by the way, our buddy Dalton will be back on the road tonight. He and Corey and the gang. Sports night live at Jersey Mike's in Malbus, or, you know, with all the stores at Malbus over there. He'll be out there starting the show live tonight at 8. And I'm sure, Dalton, opportunities for sandwiches? It will be Will we be able to get sandwiches from Jersey Mike's when we're at Jersey Mike's? Would that be a possibility?
Yes, we can. And not to correct you so quickly, but 7 p.m.
7 p.m.
For us.
I said 8 p.m.
But there will be sandwiches involved.
I was jumping to the
it.
Car show, and I'm sorry. Yes, Tom Claxton, I'm sorry. Sportsnet, I'm sorry. Yes, 7 o'clock tonight.
We're just the opener for Tom.
That's right, to lead in.
That's
lead
right.
In for Tom. So, but you'll have, I know you have FM Talk 106.5 huggers, because they're still the new run of them in the van. So you got those.
Yep.
You can't lie to people and say you don't have them.
Correct.
You got those with you. And I'm sure it will be easy for somebody to get a Jersey Mike sub.
That is also correct. And we have South Alabama Jaguars foam fingers. You do not want to miss out on these.
The real foam, the your number one foam
yes,
finger?
Yes, the we're number one foam fingers.
Excellent.
Which might come in more handy when South is closer to being number one, but at least now you can wear the number one foam finger and say, hey, I was there.
For a time down the road when you'll say, we were pretty sure we were going to be number one 15 years ago. Now we're number one.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, 7 o'clock tonight, sports night, and your chance to grab sandwiches and, of course, a lot of sports knowledge. And they got a little bit of football game to talk about here coming up this weekend, which is maybe something we'll do off the air with my buddy Jeff Poore, who is in studio. Jeff with Breitbart and Lanyap, and, of course, Yellowhammer News, which we want to get in some Yellowhammer discussion here in a little bit. Thanks for coming in.
Hey, thanks for having me in.
And this is good. We got a lot to talk about. You're going to hang out with us for a while because there's several subjects locally and nationally I want to talk about. I want to get into this bridge conversation.
Right.
You were at a meeting last week. This is something that I've been trying to wrap my head around, and there are people that send me messages from time to time on Twitter and on Facebook, and I try to read the stories, but honestly, I've had a little trouble understanding the people that are for and against it, but you did a good job of going down that meeting and assessing what's going on down there. I want to talk about that. Also want to, we'll get a chance to talk football, we'll do that, but also want to talk about one of the things we just finished up talking about, too. Am I completely off the mark when I worry about people recognizing and agreeing with the process? And I think there's guilt on both sides of, is the difference between the people right now that are happy with the results from last week or that are ticked off about those results, is it they think the refs are bad? Like, you can say Snipes down there, you can say bad ref, bad ref, but the rules and the process are still agreed on, or are people disagreeing with the rules in the process?
I think the rules in the process are fine. I think people kind of question. I mean, it depends on where you're coming at it from.
You know what I'm saying? Because if the ref is bad, there is still hope to get another ref in, you know, down the road.
Right. And I mean, she resigned, so mm-hmm. I mean, that kind of tells you there was something not quite right,
right.
here, right? I mean, you know, if she'd hung out, I think we more would have, because, you know, that's a high-profile election.
Yeah.
That's one where the whole country's watching.
Yes, yes.
Just think about these local elections for, like, school board or whatever.
Scares the bejeebus out of me.
And those kinds of things happening. So I imagine there's at least a track record there of, like, she's just... Maybe it's just kind of incompetence and the leadership needed to be changed.
And bad ref. Bad right. ref. Because I hear those getting mashed together. The discussion of bad refs and then immediately discussion on the left, this idea of voter suppression and all these things going on. And then on the right, fraudulent voting. Right? Everybody's got their favorite. I would like to arrive at a place where I could feel confident in telling people that, and I can't right now, but that all things are on the up and up with the rules. No. That we'll have bad refs from time to time on all sides, but the rules are solid. And right now, people are questioning the rules.
I mean, do we really think that the government by its nature is inefficient, it's bureaucratic, it doesn't, unless it's the IRS, of course.
Right.
But that being said, I have a lot of questions about the effectiveness of government and the way it operates. And we all know government... I mean, why should we believe that they could get the voting situation right? I just want to believe that right. they do, but do they count? Do we, you know, like John Merrill says, he's not going to count these write-in votes, and does your vote really count then? I mean,
you're questioning rules there, not refs.
Well, I'm just saying that government as a whole, the whole idea, the way it exists, I do think there's bad refs, obviously.
Yes,
but I do think the process. It could be so much more streamlined and so much more modernized. The problem is no one really trusts government to do the right thing because of all the interests.
But we trust them to not do anything.
Well, we'd rather have them do nothing. It's like the evil you know and the evil you don't know, I think.
Right, right, right.
I mean, that's the whole idea where you don't have a new Alabama state constitution. You have all these things. You're just like, all right, we know you're going to screw this up. Just do it this way. At least we know what this way is. Whereas... You know, in reality, we could walk to the ATM and get our bank balance or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
We should be able to go and vote right, like down to the ballot, and not have any of these shenanigans going on. But no one trusts the process and it mm-hmm. being reformed and in a certain way. So I just think it's just distrust of government in
right.
general.
Agreed. But the problem is if you let it continue that way. Where you don't, and I understand, you don't want to open up Pandora's box. It's like I have, many people that are, hey, have you heard of doing an article, this and that, and we ought to do this, and we ought to go, reform this in the Senate, and here's the process. I said, you realize also they could reform other things about the mm-hmm. Constitutional and
right.
the Constitution Convention, Constitutional Convention. They said, oh, well, we'd have it just for this one subject. I'd say, good luck.
It never works that way.
Right. So that's I understand that fear. But my worry is in the short term,
right.
in the short term, this is such a convenient foil for people to say your voice is not being heard, you're getting cheated in the elections. And this, I'm not saying it's happening here anytime soon, but I'm a student of world news and politics enough that quite often these armed conflicts in other places come from the fact that the losing side says the winning side rigged the election. So there's no concession, and then they take to the streets. And the other shows are going to tell you that's happening tomorrow. I'm not that show. But it is worried that kind of attitude, whether you hear it from the right or you hear from Stacey Abrams, in so many words saying, well, it's not right, but it is, she's not calling for arms, but...
I think most people generally trust the process. It may not be pinpoint accurate, but I do think most people trust the process, and they look at it like, well, I mean, you don't get it down to the vote. Now we have these really thin margins. That's where you have these situations. I don't think Stacey Abrams had a thin margin. She lost by 3%.
Right.
Which is it's a close race, but that's within the margin of error, but that is not the 0.5 or 0.3 or whatever.
Yeah, what happens when that rolls around?
Well, that's what happened in Florida,
yeah.
And then they sorted it out. They have the fail safes. They have the hand counts and the recounts and all these things they can do. I think what you're seeing in Georgia with Stacey Abrams, nothing but shameless, just politicization of the process.
She says she's ready to run for something else. And listen, if I'm her, I probably do, because she garnered, within, 57,000 votes separating
right.
or something like that. That's significant. Well, that's significant. That's some political clout.
This is one of those elections where everything is kind of lined up right if you're a Democratic candidate. And, I mean, to lose – now, Georgia's surprising because it's a changing state. Atlanta's changed. Demographics are changing. Florida, they probably should have won. I mean, the Democrats should have done a lot better in Florida, I think. But that being said, I just think this is her trying to extend her 15 minutes of fame.
All right, coming back, and we'll grab some calls, too. Lots to talk about here. Hour number two of Midday Mobile coming up. Jeff Poore, our guest in the studio. Your chance to talk to Jeff in just about 8 minutes.